Occupy Wall Street demonstrator Justin Atkins joins Becky next. It's October 13th, 2011, and this is the Rebecca Juro Show podcast.
Young people right now have no hope in our society. And I just want to see a fairer and more just society for the young people coming up and all of the Americans that right now are suffering through these hard economic times.
This seems pretty revolutionary to me. And the spirit of revolution is here. And so I need to be a part of it.
Once you are not afraid to be arrested anymore, the whole entire control of the police state disappears. And when that happens, there are incredible possibilities that are open to us. And suddenly you can imagine a different world and you believe you can be an agent of change.
I love this, Becky. The revolution is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, everybody. How you doing? This is the Rebecca Juro Show. That would be me and, of course, the ever-amazing Mr. Mike Scott, our erstwhile producer. That would be him. And thanks for tuning in. It's been a heck of a week there, Mr. Mike. You know, we weren't able to get a show on the air last week, but we are here this week, and we have a very special guest that I'm pretty excited about. Justin Atkins, who was the trans man who was arrested. He participated in the Occupy Wall Street protests back on October 1st, was arrested by the NYPD. And he was terribly mistreated. His story is available. Jillian Weiss wrote about it on the Bellerico Project and included his own account. And, of course, we'll be asking Justin about that and talking about that and about the protests. And some very interesting stuff actually was going on there. And for one thing, which I thought was quite interesting, was when the protests started shortly afterwards, with the Wall Street protests, the Occupy Wall Street folks released a statement, their first official statement. And as part of that statement, I thought this was particularly cool and farsighted of them and just cool. One of the charges they leveled at the Wall Street folks, and quite legitimately, I believe, was that they've helped to facilitate discrimination against people because of race, ethnicity, gender identity, and sexuality. And they made a point of including that. And I thought that was really, really cool. And so I encourage you, if you haven't check this out. I think you can find that. You can Google it, the original statement. But we're going to get into that. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it with Justin. And in the meantime, there's plenty of other stuff to talk about. there's so much stuff going on. For example, a couple of new transgender bills were signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown out in California. Always a good thing. Now, of course, we should point out that California already had civil rights for transgender people. Workplace rights were protected, other rights. What they did was, and at least I'm reading this off of an article here. Basically, it enables transgender Californians to update their birth certificates instead of having surgery. That's no longer required. Wish those fuckers in New York would finally do that, because I was born in Brooklyn. I can't update my birth certificate. The best they'll do for you in New York City, is they'll take the gender off your birth certificate. So what the hell does that do for you? Okay. Now, what's interesting is that the guy who was in charge of this, who was given 4 years, this was determined by the courts that had to be done, was given 4 years to accomplish this as New York City Department of Health director, was a guy by the name of Thomas Friedan. I think that was his name. Okay. He's now in the Obama administration. Yeah. The guy who was given 4 years. And then when they came to him and said, what's the story here, dude? Did you get the job? No, we didn't do it. They just didn't do it. you know, I mean, ordered by the courts, at least I believe it was ordered by the courts, just didn't do it. Just didn't do it. And this is the kind of guy who they have in the Obama administration, you know, and then they wonder why we don't trust them. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Okay. And it's just interesting. Okay. For example, just today, if you go to the Huffington Post, they've got this new thing, and I wanted to spend a little time on this. They've got this new feature, this new section of the website. It's called Gay Voices. Now, the concept of this is actually pretty good. I think it's a good idea. Basically, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, everybody has a section, a page. They have a page for gay marriage. They have a page for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Nothing for ENDA, but, you know, all right. But they call it Gay Voices, and they use transgender, bisexual, lesbian, all these things as a subsection of gay, which to me is just, I mean, are these people like real journalists, or are they just like trying to pretend that they are? Okay, because everybody knows transgender, not all transgender people are gay. I happen to consider myself a lesbian, but look at, for example, to use a popular example, how about Chaz Bono? I mean, he's a heterosexual guy with a girlfriend. He's not gay. And as we were talking about last week or the week before on the show, they were talking about him on Ed Schultz. They did a feature on his appearance on Dancing with the Stars. They have Mike Rogers on. Okay, Mike Rogers, gay blogger, a good guy and a good writer, but not transgender. So you got to wonder why the hell they're having a non-trans gay guy on to talk about transgender people. It's kind of like having a middle-aged white guy on to talk about blacks or Hispanics. Makes no sense whatsoever. Okay, and that's, as I said the last time I brought this up, not a disparagement or disparaging in any way towards Mike Rogers. He's a good guy, did the best job he could, but he's not a transgender person. So the person who I blame for that is Ed Schultz and his staff for being clueless and proving that he was totally clueless when he goes and he asks Mike Rogers and asks him if the negativity that Chaz Bono has been experiencing on Dancing with the Stars is due to gay bashing. I mean, talk about clueless. How can it be gay bashing if the guy isn't gay? Unbelievable ignorance here. Unbelievable. Now, you know, this kind of stuff just frustrates me. And so you go to the transgender page. You go to the transgender page on the website. And I'll tell you what you see. What you see is a bunch of transgender relevant articles. Most of them are not all, but most, the vast majority, written by people who aren't transgender. Yeah, well, that makes sense. And then that's about half the page, maybe. And then, you know, they just, let's see. Oh, I'm getting a message from Mr. Mike.
Hello,
here.
I always talk to her through the back channel. It's our secret way of communicating.
Okay.
Hello.
And, well, we have a special clip that we'll get to that in a minute.
We
Mr.
will.
Mike.
I'm just letting you know.
But I want to talk about this for another minute or two. Taking a sip off my delicious coffee. Anyway, so you go to this page, and about half the page is basically transgender relevant stuff, except most of it's written by people who are not transgender. Number one. Number two is, I would say, about between a third and a half of the articles there are ancient, from like a year or more ago. Some of them are so old that the pages that they link to don't exist anymore. Okay? And they're all filed as, it's all made as a subsection of gay, which, of course, is just totally inaccurate and just plain wrong. I mean, it's ridiculous. Okay? And then they wonder why. You know, I mean, they didn't even bother. They just fill out the rest of the page with, like, old articles from the gay and lesbian section. I mean, do these people have a clue? Do they bother to even try to have a clue? I don't know. And so, Anyway, so I was poking around on that site looking for stuff to talk about tonight. And there's an article up there, brand new article. It was posted apparently today, posted about 1 o'clock this afternoon, from Joe Solomonis, president of the Human Rights Campaign. Title is Fighting to Ensure Our Progress is Not Undone in 2012. Certainly a good goal. And you know, he talks about, you know, we should vote for Democrats to make sure that the Republicans don't take away what we already have. Well, okay. But the reality is that should we be talking about let's not lose any ground? Or should we be talking about how do we move forward? You know, I mean, this is from an organization, I should point out, okay, that endorsed Obama early. And then all of a sudden, magically, in the middle of a heated budget battle, when nothing less than the state of the world economy is on the line, the debt ceiling crisis, where the Republicans are threatening to shut down the government, oh my God, oh my God, but yet somehow the Senate finds time to hold a hearing on repealing the Defense of Marriage Act. While we, the rest of us, you know, the people who actually work for a living, we can't even get so much as Jay Carney, the president's press secretary, to give our own community media people, like Chris Johnson from the Washington Blade, a straight answer about whether or not the president supports the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. It's ridiculous. And, you know, so Solomonis, you know, sure, I have to agree with, you know, let's not lose any ground. I mean, how do you disagree with that, right? But, you know, there's a much bigger problem at work here. And I made a comment on that. I'll read it. It's a short comment. But I made a comment on his piece. And here's what I wrote. I wrote, let's not kid ourselves here. The Democrats had everything they needed to pass ENDA during the 111th Congress, but they still threw working-class LGBTs under the bus and pandered to the super rich. They're still doing the same thing now by holding hearings on repealing DOMA, while our community media can't even get a real answer from Obama's press secretary about where he stands on ENDA. I think it's quite interesting and not at all coincidental that all this attention to DOMA comes just after HRC endorsed Obama, thus signaling to Democrats that they don't have to actually do anything to earn our votes in 2012. HRC needs to stand up for working class LGBTs and our right to work, or they need to just shut the hell up, get out of the way, and let real progressives lead this movement. Another round of mealy-mouthed equivocating and triangulating from Obama at an HRC dinner just isn't going to cut it with this community anymore. It's time for both the Dems and HRC to realize that those days are over. And if they want to be taken seriously by the bulk of this community, which isn't making six or seven figures a year, the first thing that they need to do is prioritize our right to bring home a paycheck and feed our families over their right to save money on taxes by filing joint tax returns. Okay, well, you know, that's what I wrote. Okay, and I actually, there's been some comments, and I'm not going to read those comments because, well, quite frankly, you know, these are from other people, I don't feel that's appropriate. That was my comment. You know, those are my words. I can read my words, but I'm not going to read comments of other people without permission. But so that was where I stand on this. And you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, Solomonis is the president of the Human Rights Campaign. It's not surprising he has a login at Huffington Post. And of course, he used to post at Balerico, at the Balerico Project. But apparently, when he was confronted by angry trans people who were a little bit pissed off a couple of years ago about the way that HRC was treating us under his direction and by doing things that he was responsible for, according to all reports, you know, well, his response, instead of standing up and saying, here's why I did it, and, you know, let's talk about this and let's have a debate about it, he ran away. Yeah, he ran away. You know, because, you know, it was interesting. And I don't remember who made this point, but I'll repeat it because I thought this was perfect. They were talking about who should replace Salmanis over on the Bellerico project. And one person made what I thought was a really good point. Was the guy who is the president of HRC, he doesn't need to be a master activist. He needs to be a good fundraiser. He needs to bring in the cash. That's what the president of the HRC's real job is, what his primary job is. Yeah, sure, he gives speeches and he introduces people and, you know, but the truth of the matter is what he needs to do is he needs to bring in the big money. And that, in a nutshell, is the problem. Because the big money people, the people who can write those 6- and 7-figure checks to the Human Rights Campaign, don't give a fuck about transgender people or anyone making less than 6 figures. They just don't give a shit, okay? They're too busy having their deck parties and their apple teenies to care about the working class. And that's why this organization has been screwing over the little guy for the last 30 years of its existence because the big money people don't care. And it's entirely controlled not by what do you do, not by how good of an activist you are, not by how committed to the cause you are, but about how deep your pockets are and how many zeros on the end of your check you're willing to write in order to give yourself a voice in that organization. And that is the problem with the Human Rights Campaign, and it is the problem with the Democratic Party. It's how much justice can you afford to pay for? It is an agenda of the rich, by the rich, and for the rich. And I hasten to add that that is not, it's not like, at least not like it used to be, where we could say, well, HRC never does anything for trans people or for working class folks. Okay, I have played on this show, as those of you who listen to this show regularly will remember, I have played on this show a clip, for example, of Fred Sains, their communications director, going on Hardball with Chris Matthews, although I believe it was Ron Reagan was guest hosting that night. And going out of his way to mention the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. He gets points for me for that.
I guess I would make two observations. The first is I think that it's important to understand that marriage is not the only priority to the gay community. Far from it. In 29 states in this country, you could still be fired for your sexual orientation, and in 36 states for your gender identity. There are still a number of issues that we have as priority. Our kids are still bullied. There's still an awful lot of work to be done.
But you know what? That's a good thing to do. But when, you know what? When you go and you endorse President Obama early, before any other major organization, completely against the interests of the community, and then we see just a couple of weeks later, a few weeks later, all of a sudden, we see the president and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Kirsten Gillibrand and all these people rising up to say how much they support repealing DOMA, and the Senate is holding hearings and blah, 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 but we still can't even get so much as a how do you do for the working folks in this community, for the people who need jobs. Yeah, you remember jobs? You know, jobs, jobs, jobs. Remember that? Okay, we don't get shit from these people. And then they're going to come to us and say, vote for us because we don't want to lose what we already have. I say bullshit. I say bullshit. I say it's time to take a cue from these Occupy Wall Street folks. Get out there. Get out there. Enough of this fucking around. Enough of this mealy-mouthed bullshit President Obama evolving on gay marriage. It's like saying you're evolving on being pregnant. Grow a pair, dude. Either you're for gay marriage or you are not. You're either for the working class, regardless of whether they're LGBT or not, or you are not. You're either on the side of the employers who are fucking over people nationwide in 29 states if you're gay, 35 states if you're transgender, or you are on our side. It's, you know what? I mean, God help me, I'm quoting George Bush here, but you're either with us or against us. There is no middle ground anymore, okay? And when mealy-mouthed politicians like Obama try to show you that there is, they are lying to you. They don't deserve your support, and they don't deserve your votes. If they can't give you a straight answer on the issues that matter in your life, they don't deserve your support. It's time for these people to come out and say, here's what we believe, and here's what we're going to fight for, okay? And you know what? They have to be able to prove it, because the last time they came out and they said they were going to support this stuff, they threw us under the bus the minute the going got rough. They went and did the defense of, excuse me, they went and did Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And well, great. Well, you know, now a fraction of 1% of the entire LGBT workforce is protected from discrimination. Well, that's nice for those fraction of 1%. We can't even get Obama to sign an executive order that says that businesses that do business with the federal government have to be able to not discriminate against LGBT people. He won't even go that far. That's what we're supposed to support? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we deserve better than this. A lot better. This is a problem, and it all connects, okay? Because, you know, when you have something like Gay Voices, it all connects. I mean, these are people who are still somehow convinced, supposedly journalists, supposedly experienced journalists, who somehow are so ignorant that they still believe that because someone is gay, they have this magic insight into what it is to be transgender. I mean, you know what this is? This is like the equivalent of HuffPo turning around and saying, well, all non-white writers are going to be put in the same group, and we'll call them minority voices. That would be offensive, wouldn't it? Yeah. Okay? And you know what? They would never consider doing that because they know it's offensive. But yet it's perfectly okay. If you're transgender, we'll just lump you in under gay. That's you can just deal with that, right? I say bullshit. We're talking about the freaking internet. They couldn't have at least called it LGBT voices? At least? They couldn't have given us our own page? What kind of crap is this? Okay, and the fact is you go and look, go check it out, and it's difficult. But, you know, you can count the number of transgender writers they have at HuffPo probably on the fingers of one hand. And you know what? That's bullshit. We're important enough to have our own page, but you're not important enough to invite some of these writers. I mean, I've tried. Hell, I've been writing for the Bellerico Project for 5 years now. I don't even get so much as a thank you. It's, you know, thanks, but no thanks. We're not interested. They can't even offer me the courtesy of that. But yet they'll fill an entire page with work from non-transgender writers, old ancient crap that from years ago. I mean, just to give you an example here, you know, they have articles, let's see, Boys Town Violence, Dan Savage recounts first trip to a Chicago gay bar. Yeah, that's really transgender related. Let's see, man claims he was denied HIV medication in jail. Cubs release, it gets better video. Obama official says someone else okayed gay marriage in 1996 survey. Where the hell is the transgender connection here? I mean, this is just bad journalism, plain and simple. And these people should be embarrassed. It's obvious. It's obvious that these people, they just threw whatever the hell they had up there and said, well, okay, that's good enough. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't think it's good enough. I think it's an insult. I really do. I mean, it's nice that they're making an effort. But, you know, if you're going to do it, hell, don't you think you should at least make an effort to do it right? Okay, another one. Gopalan mourned at DuPont Circle Village Vigil. Well, that was a gay man, who was murdered in Washington, D.C. Wasn't a transgender woman. It was a gay man. What the fuck is it doing on the transgender page? You know, it's just annoying. It really is. And I find it annoying, bordering on the offensive. I mean, you don't see that on the gay page, you know. And what do we got at the top? Okay, they've got an article about Jerry Brown and the historic transgender laws. They've also got an article about a trans parliament person was elected to a parliament. I forget which country. Let's see. Poland. That's right. Okay. Which is a fairly big deal. That's important. Okay. And then guess who? Can you guess? Yeah. Chaz Bono. Okay. You know, and that's basically it. It's Chaz Bono and a couple of other things. Oh, and they even have an article about, back from the beginning of the month, about getting, you know, transgender New Yorkers being screwed by the New York legislature while gay people celebrate their gay marriage and transgender people get fucked over for the fourth time in the last decade. You know, yeah, great. You know, I mean, I shouldn't complain. I mean, at least that's transgender relevant. Unlike the one which is like just under that, more than 1,600 Illinois couples applied for civil union so far. Where's the relevance there? You know, I mean, it's just a joke. And you know, they can't fill up a single page with trans. Well, why not? Why can't they fill it up? Because they don't have enough transgender writers. Because they won't bother to invite enough to participate. But they want to look inclusive, but they don't want to actually take the effort to actually be inclusive, to actually fulfill the journalistic obligation that they took on when they made this page. All right. Anyway, you know, it just frustrates me. And this is exactly why. It's exactly this kind of crap, this kind of ignorance that we're still fighting. And, you know, people like Joe Salmanis who say, oh, we've got to defend what we already have instead of saying we've got to fight to get what we deserve. Before we worry about whether people can file joint tax returns, maybe we should make sure that they can put food on the table and have a warm place to sleep at night. Maybe we should cover that first. You know, I mean, it's a joke, you know, and frankly, you know, unworthy. If the Human Rights Campaign wants to be a real factor in this community, well, you know, you need to actually show some cojones here. And it's just yet another reason why, regardless of who replaces him, it is a very, very good thing that Joe Salmanis is on his way out. Because this guy isn't going to do it. This guy and his Dolce and Gabbana suits and his Appletinis, goodbye. Okay? We've had enough of this crap. Okay? And if Occupy Wall Street teaches us anything, ladies and gentlemen, it's that we're getting beyond this shit. No more corporate media. No more corporate activist organizations. We need this. This is the voice. It's time for the voice of the real people to be heard. And it is time to get a hold of Justin Adkins for our big interview. So I'm going to have Mr. Mike throw on a song here. And now that I've went and shot my mouth off, I have to go check and see what it is. Oh, it's Transgender Nation by Jane County. See you in a couple, gang.
coming to your town, so don't you put us down. We want the world, we want it now. Whoa, whoa, yeah. We are the shaman and the Cherokee tribe. Sweet by and by, the angels in heaven are genderless, messengers of the heavenly kiss. So don't hide what we all have deep inside. Hear me cry, we're the transgeneration. Start the celebration. We're coming to your town, so don't you put us down. We want the world, we want it now.
Justin Atkins joins Becky next on Q1.FM and the Rebecca Giro Show.
One, two, three, kick.
You know, they're the enemy. They're the enemy.
Who's the enemy?
Obama and Biden. Are you kidding? The Three Stooges.
That's only
the
two.
The one that makes the most sense is Herman Cain. Herman Cain makes more sense.
Y'all can keep the change. Yeah, you can keep Fox and Friends. And
hey, all right. We are back. How you doing? The Rebecca Giro Show. That would be me, and of course the ever amazing Mike Scott. That would be him.
Hi, Justin.
Hey, how you doing?
It's good. It's great to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on. Now, of course, we need to tell people that Justin was at the Occupy Wall Street protest in Brooklyn. He's a trans man, and you went with the march on October 1st. To the Brooklyn Bridge, and you, along with many other protesters, were arrested by the NYPD. But you were treated very differently than most of the folks who were arrested. First, let's talk about what brought you. I know you are not a person who lives in New York. What brought you to New York and to the Occupy Wall Street protests in the first place?
Well, I heard about the protests, and I've protested a lot of things in my life, to be honest with you. But I heard about what's going on, and I really am concerned about especially corporations' infiltration into the political system, among a variety of other things. And so when I heard what was going on, I just thought I needed to be there. So I was actually down there the weekend before as well, and then I was down there the weekend of the first. So that was the second weekend I went down. I live up in Massachusetts, so it's about a 4-hour journey for me to get down there.
Okay. And so you joined the march to the Brooklyn Bridge. What exactly happened there at the march, and what led to your arrest?
Well, the original plan was to go up the walkway over the Brooklyn Bridge, which is kind of like in the middle, and people can walk across that way. I was towards the front of the march, and when we got down to the bridge, we decided that we really wanted to, there were almost 5,000 of us at that point, and we really wanted to take the roadway. You know, this is a protest. This isn't, you know, a permitted march. We're taking the streets. And at first that wasn't really happening. The police were blocking us. And then I looked over and saw the police leading everybody up the bridge. And so I joined on the roadway, and so I joined in, and we got up to about the middle with the police leading us along the whole way, and we got up to the middle, and there was a big barricade that the police had set up, and they'd actually split the march at that point, so they had barricaded in front and behind 700 of us, and then they just started arresting us basically one by one.
So then, in other words, there was nothing really that you did specifically. They just started picking people out and arresting them?
They arrested all 700 of us.
Wow.
Oh, okay, and then what happened? I know you were put into a police van and you were taken to a police station in Brooklyn. What happened once you arrived?
They found out that I was transgender when I was being arrested on the bridge. There were legal observers there, and I've done a lot of marches that have legal observers, and I know that legal observers want to know pertinent information, such as if you're asthmatic and dependent on an inhaler. Mm-hmm. Or any other kind of medication, or if you're transgender. And not knowing how the night was going to go, I thought it was important to tell the legal observer. And my arresting officer heard that at that moment. So by the time we got to Precinct 90 in Brooklyn, all of the officers in the at the precinct were aware that I was transgender. And at first, they put me in a cell with three of the guys. They separated everyone by gender. And so at first, I was put in a cell with three of the guys I was arrested with. And then about 10 minutes later, an officer came in and brought me over to another side of the jail. And they segregated me out, basically because they didn't know what to do with a trans person. And at that point, they proceeded to handcuff me to a railing. And I thought it was just going to be a temporary thing until they found a single jail cell for me. But instead, they left me handcuffed to that railing for 8 hours.
Wow. And as I remember reading your story, which was published at the Blerico Project and elsewhere, this was an unclean bathroom, right? It was a bathroom that was stinking of urine and feces and stuff.
Yeah, the room that they put me in is where they normally put people as they're waiting to go somewhere else. So there were eight guys in one cell. There was actually an empty cell in the room that I was in. that was empty for majority of the evening. And then there was this restroom. The railing that I was handcuffed to was basically kind of like almost went into the restroom. So I was just barely outside of the bathroom. It was the only functioning toilet in the jail. So the 70 protesters that had been arrested, whenever anybody needed to go to the bathroom, they would bring them there. But we've all been arrested, so they're not going to shut the door on you. So I had to sit there while everyone went to the bathroom all night.
Ugh. That's from what I read, they said that you basically they were pointing you out to other police officers as like for humor value and stuff because you were transgender.
Well, it started off because there's this glass wall and it was a busy night at the jail. This is not at this precinct. There's not clearly there aren't usually this amount of officers coming in and out. So the officers were seeing other officers they hadn't seen in a long time, and when new officers would come in, they'd look through the glass wall and they'd see me handcuffed there, and they would ask this female officer, and I could hear them ask, why is this guy handcuffed to the railing? And this one female officer, I could not hear what she said, but it became pretty clear after the first time that this happened that she was telling them that I was trans, because they then would both look at me and laugh at me and kind of gawk at me. Finally, at one point, I just started waving to them because, you know, it was really, you know, the best I can think of being in the freak show where people are just standing there laughing at you, and the best you can do really is just wave. I mean, you don't really have any other options at that point.
Right, and that brings up the next question I wanted to ask you. I mean, that had to be difficult. What was going through your mind at that time? I mean, were you scared? Did you just decide to make fun of it and wave to people, or was this scary for you, what was your mind space when you were there?
Well, I approach everything in my life with humor. And definitely bad situations, I usually, you know, try to make light of them. That's just my coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I also, I'm a trans activist. I have since I first started transitioning, actually even before that. And so I just also took it as an opportunity to start educating people that, you know, I'm not a freak show. I'm not something that, you know, I'm not a being that should be, you know, handcuffed to a railing. I'm a person. And so, you know, especially with them bringing in all the protesters, I had the opportunity throughout the night to, so everyone was asking why was I handcuffed, and I had the opportunity to start telling them, I'm handcuffed here because I'm transgender, and they don't know what to do with me, and there's no protocol, and this is what they're doing. And
wow.
So I really approached the night in a, I work at a college as well, so I approached the night in really an educational manner, and trying to hopefully, you know, trying to reach out to some of these officers so that, you know, hopefully this won't happen to other people. I know most, you know, a lot of trans people encounter a lot worse than I did, and I just want to be part of the solution, and I decided to start that night.
I hear you. Now, when Jillian Weiss, who's a Balearica Project associate editor, wrote this up for a post on that blog, she made a note that she said that the way you were treated was, in her opinion, quite possibly a violation of the equal protection guarantees of the U.S. Constitution and certainly of New York City law, which explicitly prohibits discrimination based on gender identity. It has for about a decade now. Do you see it that way as well?
I'm not aware. Jillian has a much better grasp of the law than I do. It's unclear, honestly, from everyone I've talked to at this point, it's unclear of if it is a human rights violation. I personally, I guess I would say that I believe it is, but at the same time, there's no protocol for the NYPD on how to deal with transgender detainees. So there's nothing necessarily that they went against. You know, it would be the general human rights violation of leaving someone handcuffed for 8 hours. But over the past couple of weeks, I've been finding out more and more that that happens to people on a more regular basis than any of us would probably like to imagine. So I don't totally know how to answer the question, but yeah.
Okay, and are you contemplating trying to take any sort of legal action against the city or the NYPD in any way?
I haven't made any decisions at this point. My biggest concern is to try to prevent anyone else having to go through what I went through. And the fact that it was picked up by the media so quickly, there's a good chance that I might be able to help see more change by not doing legal action and by working with people that are already working with the NYPD. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of trying at this point to take that route, but I have not made a decision yet.
Okay. And now I know you were released several hours later, I guess around 2 a.m., and you were charged only with disorderly conduct, and that's as opposed to other protesters who were arrested during the same protest and received more tickets. Were the other protesters charged with, are you aware, that you were not charged with?
It really varies. It seems like one of the common other things that people were charged with was blocking a roadway. It really varies. It's a lot of kind of things along those lines, blocking a roadway, something. Everyone, it seems to me that everyone got disorderly conduct, and then there were these additional ones. Disturbing the peace is something I've heard of. It's a whole variety of things. I'm not totally sure the rhyme or the reason to the charges they charged any of us with, really.
Yeah, okay. The other question I wanted to ask you along those lines was, do you believe that perhaps, and I don't know, maybe you can tell me, that the reason you only got one ticket was in any way related to the way you were treated while they had you in custody?
That's the only thing I've been mentally able to come up with, is that, you know, at some point they realized that I had been treated differently, and thus I only got one, you know, one charge. I can't think of any other reason. From everyone I talked to, there were 70 of us at that precinct, and to my knowledge, everyone else received more than one charge. So, and I was the only one treated the way I was. So, it's the only way I've been able to think about it.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the protests. One of the things I noted with great, pleasure was that in the first official statement that was issued by the protest participants, one of the charges that they had in their statement against Wall Street was, and I'm quoting here, they have perpetuated inequality and discrimination in the workplace based on age, the color of one's skin, sex, gender identity, and sexual orientation. Do you believe that the Occupy Wall Street protests are a place where the issues of trans people can and will be heard? Or do you think maybe our issues will be lost among all that diversity of so many different issues and concerns that these protests are focused on?
I'm really proud of the organizers. The first weekend that I was down there, it didn't seem that they were excluding trans people, but it didn't seem totally like they were including us. By the second weekend I was down there, I was so impressed that so many of the conversations that were happening around me were really clear that they're including trans people and gender issues in general within all of their thoughts and ways of operating. And I just was so proud of the growth that I saw in a week. And I don't think that I don't think that trans issues will be lost. I think that, I really think that they're going to remain at the forefront, because I think one of the things is that they're seeing that there's this inequality in general. And, what you're saying about in general diversity, for a lot of trans people, it's the multiple layers of oppression. Trans women of color are oppressed a lot more than I am as a middle-class white guy, white trans guy that totally passes. I encounter a lot less oppression than a lot of my trans women of color friends do. So I think that's all going to stay at the forefront.
Absolutely. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you is now, having gone through everything that you have, what advice would you have for other trans folks who may be considering participating in Occupy protests wherever it is that they live?
The main thing I would tell people is to make sure that they're going with a friend, or that they become friends with people while they're there before they would potentially be in a position to be arrested. The weekend I was down there, I was there by myself. And so no one around me, I didn't know anybody that I was with. And I really wish in a lot of ways that I would have been with someone else, or that I would have, become closer with somebody before we got arrested. Because that helps us all look out for each other. And I think that's a really important thing. The other thing I would say is to just go join any of the Occupy protests. If we want our issues to be heard, we need to be full participants. And the movement on a whole, like we just talked about, is inclusive of our issues. And we need to make sure that we're bringing those issues up.
Absolutely. And finally, our final question. When you were at the protest and with the folks that you were both arrested with and that you were interacting with at the protest, did you feel that there was, that people were genuinely interested and welcoming and wanted to be inclusive of trans issues? Did you get a real sense that there was, a desire to include these things among the folks?
Yeah, most definitely. And the other thing I'll say on that, sadly off your question, but once I was released, I went back to Liberty Square. So it was probably about 3 o'clock in the morning on the 2nd that I arrived back at Liberty Square. By the time I got there, the majority of people had heard what had happened to me already through the grapevine. And everyone just surrounded me with so much support and said, asking what could they do, wanting to make sure that my story got out there, trying to make sure that other people started, people that had more understanding about trans issues were educating other people. I found this an incredibly inclusive community. I'm kind of frustrated that I'm not able to be down there more often, but I work two jobs, so it's kind of hard to get down. But, and I think it was the advocate that I told, I don't know, I've been talking to a lot of people. I think it was an advocate that I was telling them that it's one of the first times where I have felt in my days of protesting that queer issues in general, lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer questioning, all of us, that all of our issues are part of the movement. It's not like it's a separate thing. And normally it's like, we're either fighting for, trans rights, LGBT rights, or something else. And this is like a movement where everybody's together, and it's such an awesome feeling. It's a really empowering and invigorating feeling to be in that kind of environment.
I absolutely, and I think that is so awesome to hear. I mean, you know, obviously what happened to you was horrible, but what's really encouraging is to hear that you know, the way you were accepted is and included. At least, you know, at least it ends well. If it didn't begin well, and so that's at least encouraging. And of course, I would encourage people, if you know you want to get out there and protest. I think you're absolutely right that this is something that we, as a community, need to become more active. You know, if you want something, you have to ask for it. And I certainly think we have to spend more time being out and open. You know, and some of us are, you know, a little bit more detectable, and you know, maybe we just have to be a little louder. You know, I don't know. Do you feel that way, that we as a community, I'll hit you with this just one more. Do you think we need to get out there and be more visible than we are?
I do. You know, here's the thing. I totally pass. You know, I don't have to tell anyone that I'm trans. I have the biggest mouth, though, and I don't ever want to hide the fact that I'm trans. To me, that's a huge part of who I am. And you know, I think that I also think we need to stop asking. I think we need to start demanding. You know, we need to start demanding that we're included, that our issues are being heard, that, you know, we need to start demanding that not just other protesters, but that the system, the corporate system, the, you know, the man, they, whoever you want to say it is, we need to start demanding that we're heard. And the one way that we can do that is that we can be out there and be loud and be visible. I was one of the main organizers for the first New England Transgender Pride March and Rally in Northampton a few years ago. And, you know, the whole point of that was that we as trans people need to be out there and to be loud and to be heard. The more that people, I believe that most people are genuinely good people, and I believe that if we're more visible and we're demanding our rights and we're saying, no, this is, you know, we're also saying things that happen to us, I think we're going to start building a greater coalition around us. So I think it's very important that we get out there.
I completely agree with you. And Justin, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us tonight. This was a really important issue, and something that I think our community really needs to, you know, unite around. You know, yeah. I agree with you. I think we need to be more visible, and we need to, you know, take, frankly, you know, it may be a little risky, but I think it's something that we need to do as a community and for ourselves as individuals as well. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing this story with us. And I hope, you know, you'll come and you'll visit with us again and talk to us again, because you know, this was really great to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, and so that was Justin Adkins. And wow, you know, I mean, you hear a story like this, and it's just, you know, your heart sinks, because you see the discrimination and the singling out and the bigotry. Yes, bigotry, you know, and frankly, you know, you don't know how much of it is ignorance. You don't know how much of it is bigotry, but you know, you have to, what this boils down to here, boys, girls, and everyone else, is a lack of respect. And you know, well, let's be honest, when you get arrested, respect isn't high on the agenda, but you know, I think you have a right to expect that you'll be treated like everyone else and not singled out. And I think Justin made some excellent, excellent, excellent points there. You know, and I hope people will go out and they won't be afraid. And, you know, when you go to these protests, make sure you go with friends. Make sure that if you're going to do something risky, something where you may wind up arrested or in conflict with the police or something, make sure that people know what you're doing and who you are. Make sure that you are, you know, there may be only so much you can do to protect yourself, but at least somebody knows what happens. And, you know, hopefully, you know, you may not be able to prevent something negative from happening, but at least you can minimize the negative impact as much as possible. And, you know, I think it's wonderful to hear how well he was received by the Occupy Wall Street participants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's really what gives me a little bit of, you know, a positive feeling about this, even though he was horribly mistreated. Because let's be honest, that was about the cops. That was about the cops. And you know, I hope there's some repercussions here among the cops. I mean, I would love to see this story get some legs. Unfortunately, we haven't really seen that yet. We haven't seen the media, you know, aside from, you know, people like me pick this stuff up and Jillian Weiss. And, you know, we haven't really seen a lot of the mainstream media pick up this story yet. And I hope they will, because this is something that needs to be heard, because this isn't about protesters. This isn't about the protests. This isn't about the demands. This is about treating people decently. That's what this is about. This is about not singling people out for worse treatment simply because of who they are. That's what this boils down to. And that's exactly what the New York City police did, the NYPD. And, you know, everybody knows perfectly well that they're never going to admit that they're wrong. They're going to say they acted appropriately. But it's not up to them. That's what they're going to do. We already know that that's what they're going to do. It's up to us to make it an issue. It's up to this community to call this out. And particularly to those of you who may be listening in the New York City area, those of you who are residents, those of you who vote for people like Mike Bloomberg and Christine Quinn, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be successful with this, but I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to see if I can get Speaker Quinn to talk to us. I'm going to see if I can get her on the show.
All right.
I may not be successful. I'm telling you up front, I'm going to give it a shot. I've met Speaker Quinn. She's a very nice lady, a good person. I've met her a couple of times. Seems genuinely interested and concerned in the issues of the transgender community. But I would love to know, because I know that she is one of the people who's on the short list of people who will possibly be New York City's next mayor. And I would love to know what her take is on this story and what she believes. I mean, does she believe that the cops were in the wrong here? And you know, how would she change things? How would she change? I mean, clearly, as Justin said, one of the biggest problems here was that there are no procedures in place for dealing with transgender people. Well, for an organization charged with upholding the law of the city of New York is that you treat transgender people with respect. You don't discriminate. So you have to have procedures. And what I would like to know from Christine Quinn and from the New York City administration is, well, clearly those things are not, the police are not in compliance with the law. So what do you do? Are we going to arrest people? No, probably not. But you can certainly take steps to put them in compliance with the law. And so I would love to hear. I'm gonna see if I can contact her and see if I can get her on the show. I would, you know, who knows? I mean, they may turn around and say, sorry, we're too busy. They may. But I'm going to give it a shot and see if we can get her on to respond to a few of Justin's concerns and to the concerns that we have as a community. You know, and I say this as a New York City native. I was born in Brooklyn. I grew up, you know, from the years 18 to 21. I lived on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. That's where I came of age. Now, I came of age as a male. You know, it was still 35 years. Well, 15 years. What am I saying? I came out at 35. So I was still 15 years or so before I was ready to come out as a woman. But at the same time, you know, that's where I have a long history with New York. And it's an important place to me and to, you know, my family. Both sides of my family come from Brooklyn. You know, and I would like to know for the people who live and work and play in New York. You know, are they going to take steps to make transgender people feel safe and respected in compliance with the law of the city of New York? And that would be basically the focus of the questions that I have for Speaker Quinn. And I'm hoping that maybe she can take a few minutes and talk to us. So anyway, it is time to go to a break. It is top of the hour. You are listening to the Rebecca Darrow Show, and we have something from the lovely and beautiful friend of this show, Jenny Slater. What do we got there, Mr. Mike?
I don't love you anymore, but that's not true.
All right, we'll catch you in a couple.
I always love Nikki. Jenny Slater from Becky and Mike and Q1.
People of the Earth, do not attempt to adjust your televisions and radios. I have taken control of all frequencies. Control! Control! Control of all broadcast frequencies!
I can't seem to face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep. My bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer. Qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 fa
fa fa. Sing along.
Run, 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 run away.
Okay, I'm gonna stop doing that. I'll break somebody's speakers. Oh God, I'm
that.
Such a bad singer.
That's so amazing. During that interview, I kept thinking, well, it's like last century in New York City, at least for some of those NYPD cops. It is incredible.
Well, I mean, you know, as bad as Justin's experience was, I mean, this is hardly the first time we've heard of something like this. I mean, pepper sprayed innocent women who were protesting on one of the first days. I mean, what it seems like is that the NYPD believes that you know they can just go in and beat people and you know, here's the thing. Most of these and this was pointed out several times in interviews that I've seen, and I happen to agree with, at least from what I've seen. Obviously, I have not been there. I have not been to the protests. I wish I could go, but I just, you know, finances being what they are, poor unemployed tranny here, just haven't been able to get down there. you know, what they said was, you know, the grunts, I mean, I don't want to call them grunts. I mean, that's kind of a tacky term, but you know, the blue shirts, the officers, the police officers have been generally pretty good. You know, they've been respectful. They've been, you know, keeping order, which is what cops should be doing. They'd be keeping order. It's the officers. It's the supervisors is what I meant to say. The supervisors, the white shirts, the guys who are the lieutenants and the higher ups, who are the ones who are really abusing the protesters. The guy who was who pepper sprayed those four women, his name was Anthony Bologna. I think he was a lieutenant or an inspector or something. You know, he was a white shirt. And he was the one. And you know, if you saw the video of this, and you can find this on YouTube, it's out there. I don't have a link for you. You know, one of these days we're going to get a website and we're going to start putting stuff up there.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you know, we will.
We're working on it.
Yes,
we're working
we can.
On it, okay. We are. I've got the name. All reserved, RebeccaGiro.com.
Yes.
Some of you may remember we used to have a website,
yeah, well,
which kind of went away.
It'll be back.
We were employing the wonderful Rice Aroni, and
who is a wonderful web designer.
His extreme skills in website creation, we will be employing those once again.
So what do you want on your website? You want a place to have people comment on episodes?
Yeah, people to comment. I want to be able, like when I make a reference like this, where I say, you know, hey, here's
video. Yeah.
Go look it up on Google. I won't have to say, go look it up on Google. I'll say, hey, go to the website, and it's posted there.
Well, we can do
because,
that.
Because, you know, I've seen all these things, and I can copy down a website as well as anyone else, you know, because I'm sure as people understand, there's a lot of preparation that goes into a show like this. You know, a lot of times, sometimes more, sometimes less, depends on what kind of content we have that particular week. But you know, I go through a lot of stuff, and as do you, Mr. Mike, and we, you know, we put up articles and we put up videos, and a lot of times the sound that you hear.
Sometimes we have to clear, like when we play artists like Jenny Slater, we have to get permission for the podcast, not for our streaming, but for the podcast that happens later on, if it's going to be on there.
Exactly. And by the way, you know, I speaking of clips, we have one, and I want to set this up before we go to it just yet, Mr. Mike.
Sure.
What we have a clip last week on Bill Maher. They had a bunch of people. Among them were Alan Grayson, who is the former Florida congressman. You know, he famously said that the Republican plan for health care was don't get sick.
Yes.
Really, you know, yeah. It was kind of a loudmouth after my own heart.
But he's great. You know. He's just fantastic. If I had money, I would be sending it to Alan Grayson because he's running for his old seat in Florida.
Yes. And if you live in his district, please vote for this guy.
Yes.
I think if they were going to primary Obama, if progressives were going to primary Obama, this is the guy they should be running.
Okay.
Okay. And he was talking, and there was a Bill had him and the guy, his name is PJ O'Rourke.
Uh-huh.
PJ O'Rourke used to be the editor of the National Lampoon, used to be funny. Then he became a conservative, and like Dennis Miller and Kelsey Grammer, you know, stopped being funny because being conservative, of course, just isn't funny. You know, there's just a little bit too much hate and bigotry and elitism in there for any real humor to survive in conservatism, in my opinion. You know, but he was making a point, and PJ O'Rourke is like basically mocking him. Oh, give the man a bongo, and you know, this kind of crap. And he came back with something. I thought this was just
standing
awesome.
Ovation.
Mike, why don't you run that now?
No, listen, Bill, I have no trouble understanding what they're complaining about.
Oh,
Wall
you
Street
pass
helped.
Econ?
I was an economist for more than 3 years, so
oh, I
think
I guess
so.
You did. No wonder.
Yes.
You were probably the grad student who flunked me in Econ 101.
No, but I would have if I'd had the chance. Now, let me tell you what they're talking about. They're complaining about the fact that Wall Street wrecked the economy 3 years ago. And nobody's held responsible for that. Not a single person has been indicted or convicted for destroying 20% of our national net worth accumulated over the course of two centuries. They're upset about the fact that Wall Street has iron control over the economic policies of this country, and that one party is a wholly owned subsidiary of Wall Street, and the other party caters to them as well. That's the real truth of the matter, as you said before. And
get the man a bongo drum. They found their spokesman.
Okay.
Well,
get a bongo drum, forget where to go to the bathroom, and it's yours.
Listen, if I am a spokesman for all the people who think that we should not have 24 million people in this country who can't find a full-time job, that we should not have 50 million people in this country who can't see a doctor when they're sick, that we shouldn't have 47 million people in this country who need government help in order to feed themselves, and we shouldn't have 15 million families who owe more on their mortgage than the value of their home, okay, I'll be that spokesman.
Oh, man, yeah. See, this is what I mean. This is what we need to hear, you know, and not just at election time. You know, I mean, Obama turns into this man of the people, you know, when it's getting close to election time, when all of a sudden his power and position and that of his fellow Democrats is being threatened, then all of a sudden he becomes Mr. Populist. You know, where the fuck were you 2 years ago when we needed you? Where were you when we were hoping to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act? Where were you then? You know, see, this is the problem with Obama and with the Democrats. They're all about jobs, jobs, jobs now, when it's time to run for office. But when it's time for people, when we say, okay, now we need you to keep all those promises that you made to us last election, and the election before that, and the election before that, and the election before that, now we need you to actually keep those promises. We need you to pass that bill. And we know that you have the votes to do it, and we know that you can do it. They're nowhere to be found. All of a sudden, we get Nancy Pelosi saying, oh, well, you know, that's what the activists told us they wanted, repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I say it on the show all the time. I'll say it again. Who are these activists? I mean, I think, you know, personally, I don't think it's a coincidence, you know, at all. I think that there is an answer, and the answer has three letters in it. The first one is an H, and the last one is a C. You work it out, okay? I mean, really, this is not an attack on the Human Rights Campaign, okay? But because, you know what? They're advocating for what their major donors want. And if you understand that the Human Rights Campaign is basically focused on the agenda of super wealthy people, you know, then, you know, I mean, you can't get mad at the Republicans. Well, you can, but you can't get angry at a party that comes at you and up front says, this is what we're for. But when an organization comes and says, we're fighting for you, and then when it comes time to actually fight for you, for the people, the working class, the folks who go to work, who punch a time clock, who collect a paycheck every week, or every other week, or whatever, who are living off of that money that they make, you know, who are going and doing their own laundry and going to the grocery store and living a lower or middle class life, when it comes time to keep those promises that you made to those people, and you don't do it, then you should expect people to turn around to the next time when you come back and say, oh, well, you know, we're going to do it this time. You got to expect that those people aren't going to just take your word for it. Because, you know, I mean, we waited a generation. In fact, more than a generation. What am I saying? When the first version of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act was introduced by, okay, go. This is how far back, 1973, by Ed Koch, Assemblyman Ed Koch, pre-mayor Ed Koch, but as New York Assemblyman Ed Koch, and Bella Abzug.
Really?
Okay. 1973. Okay? I was still in grade school in 1973. I was 11 years old. So was the president. When a bill has been around for that long, and you have an opportunity to pass it, after all those years and all the promises that you've made for all those years, for more than 35 years, that people have been waiting for this basic civil right, and then you don't do it? And you expect us to trust you now? Why? Why on earth should we take your word for anything? I mean, this is what I don't get, is people making excuses. And, you know, I hate to say it because I love having her on the show, you know, but when we had Babs Kasbar on the other a couple of weeks ago, I mean, she's saying, oh, we have to work harder. And you know what? She's right. But you know what? It's bullshit to say, oh, well, the problem is us. The problem is not us. The problem is cowardice and disinterest on the part of a Democratic Party that wants our money and our votes, but isn't willing to put up and do to keep their promises, that cares more about protecting the jobs of their cronies in Congress than they do about protecting the jobs of American citizens who are struggling and who need their help to protect their basic civil rights. Okay, you know, it comes back to that same clip that we heard, and I don't know if you still have this handy, Mr. Mike, but if you do, we can run it.
Sure.
The clip of Diego Sanchez talking about this.
Hang on just a second. It'll take me a minute to find it. But yeah,
okay, well, while you're talking about it, let me know when you have it. But in the meantime, okay, basically he said, we ran out of time. And to me, that is, I mean, and I'm not denigrating Diego here. I'm denigrating the Democrats.
Let's see if this is
How do you run out of time to protect American civil rights? How do you run out of time for that? Okay, let's run that.
Number one, the thing that breaks my heart the most is that we did have the votes this time. And it didn't come up because of two things primarily. One is health care, which took so much longer. And number two, is the don't ask, don't tell, the thinking that it needed to go on with the defense bill. And so that when it came up, it went. Both Congressman Barney Frank and Tammy Baldwin do believe, and we know because we counted, we believe we had the votes this past Congress. And we ran out of time. So the short answer is the calendar. But this time we actually had the votes with even some Republican surprises to pass a fully inclusive end of bill.
I mean, that to me is the most damning thing against the Democrats of anything else. I mean, personally, you know, as much as I would have hated to hear it, if they had come to us back when, and said, look, we're having a problem here. It's the transgender thing. It's the timing thing. It's the this thing. But at least if they had come to us and said, hey, we're having an issue, that would be one thing. And we wouldn't be good, and we would call them out on it, and we wouldn't be happy. But at least it would be honest. Instead, what we got was George Miller just saying, oh, it's coming, it's coming. The vote is coming. Don't worry. We'll take care of it. And it just never came. So it's just, you get to the point where you start to say, you know, are they really being honest with us, or are they just saying this to shut us up? And if the truth is if they're just saying it to shut us up, then why are we shutting up? Shouldn't we be turning up the heat even higher? I mean, this is a disgrace. Okay, this is a party that keeps using the same words over and over, jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, if you really believe that the issue is jobs, 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 well, why aren't you protecting people's right to work? Why are you deprioritizing this? And then you turn around and you come to us, well, we can't do it now because the Republicans control the House. Well, yeah, but when they didn't control the House, you didn't do shit. You gave us this crap. You gave us a bunch of executive orders that will be repealed the minute the next Republican gets into office. You can forget about all that stuff, okay? Because they're saying, well, they're going to try to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They're going to reinstate it. You know, you can be sure that if they want to reinstate Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and they want to make sure that DOMA doesn't get repealed, okay, you can be quite sure that anything that Obama signs by executive order is going to disappear like the wind, just like it was when George Bush took over as president. And all of a sudden, all those Clinton things that he did, all those executive orders he signed, poof, gone. gone. Like an elaborately crafted sandcastle that goes, washes out with the sea with the next wave of Republican bigotry. Goodbye. Never heard from. You know, and it took another 8 years for a guy like Obama to get in, and another couple of years of him being there before they even started. You know, I mean, is this acceptable? I mean, should we be settling for this? Should we be saying, oh, it's okay, you can wait to protect our basic civil rights as Americans. You don't have to protect our birthright. You know, those words that we heard when we were in grade school, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, that's, you know, that's for straight people. We understand that. Bullshit. Bullshit. It is time. It is time for us to take a cue from people like Justin Adkins. Get out there. Get to the Wall Street protests. Get to the protest in your neck of the woods. Start one of your own. We have to do this. Boys, girls, everyone else, time's up. We can't get this. Joe Salmanis is not going to save us. The Human Rights Campaign is not going to fight for us. Okay? If we want something to happen, we're going to have to make it happen. And we're going to have to take a cue. Okay, what I would like to see is you know, if the National Center for Transgender Equality and Get Equal could have an organization that was a child, if you know what I mean, that's what I want to see. I want to see an organization with a trans-focused agenda like NCTE and the activist attitude and cojones of a Get Equal. Okay, that's what I think we need. And it needs to be not only out there and loud and proud, but it needs to be talking about trans issues specifically, not just as, oh, yeah, and also, you know, well, it's gay marriage and it's this and it's that and it's the other thing. Oh, yeah, and trans people, too. Okay, that time for that bullshit is over. Okay, it has to be us, loud, proud, and speaking for ourselves. That's what it has to be. Has to be. Because if we depend on these other organizations to fight for us, if we count on these people to go and clear the way for us, we're going to be waiting. Because the reality is, as long as rich folks control our agenda, which is what the Human Rights Campaign is, as long as the super wealthy are controlling the political agenda, we are always going to be down the list somewhere. Always. Always. And so it's time. Okay? Now, am I saying go protest the Human Rights Campaign? No. No, I'm not. And the reason I'm not is because they haven't done anything, at least not recently, worthy of protesting them. But you know what? The next time Obama comes to your town and wants a stump for your vote, you should be there. And be willing to talk to anybody who will listen, including those with microphones and cameras, and say, you know what? Yeah, I support President Obama, but he's not doing what he needs to do. We need more. You want my vote? I want yours. You hear that, Mr. Democratic Congressman? You want my vote? I want yours. You hear that, Kirsten Gillibrand? You know, Chuck Schumer? All these other guys who are talking liberalism with one side of their mouth and shoving in money from Wall Street with the other, okay? You know, that's not acceptable anymore. You're either on the side of the working class or you're on the side of the millionaires. There is no middle ground anymore. And anyone who sides with the millionaires, we're going to call people out on it. And we're going to say, you know what? You had the opportunity to protect basic civil rights for all Americans, and you went and hid under a rock. Yeah. Okay? And that goes for Obama, and that goes for any of these guys. Okay? And I don't care who it is. I don't care who it is. We have to be unwilling. We have to be able to talk like Alan Grayson. That's the model here. We have to be unafraid to say, here's reality. You know, and we also have to be willing, because it's really the only way it's going to get to be outside of our own community. We have to be willing to say to people like MSNBC, you know, we need to call out Rachel Maddow. Doesn't matter if you like watching her on TV. I do, too. I watch her every night. But you know what? That doesn't make her any less wrong for not at least including us. When you erase us from issues that matter, when you erase us from stories which we should be a part of, we need to call that out. And that goes for Keith Olbermann, and that goes for Chris Hayes and Ed Schultz and Lawrence O'Donnell and anyone else, and then the Young Turks and anyone else who goes and calls themselves progressive and liberal but only focuses on the issues of those making six figures and up. You know what? If you're going to throw around the term LGBT, the B and the T count too. And if you're not going to focus on those, at least some of the time, then you know what? You don't get the right to call yourselves LGBT supportive, and you don't get the right to call yourselves progressive. You just don't. Because real progressives raise up the little guy. They're not focusing on a corporate agenda, okay? I mean, I was watching Chris Hayes this last weekend, and it's hysterical. I mean, here he goes. He makes this whole big speech. Well, not a big speech, but he made a comment anti-hydrofracking. Of course, hydrofracking is where they go and drill for pockets of natural gas under very often watersheds, areas where drinking water is pumped from, okay? And he goes and makes a negative thing about this. And then they cut away and go to a commercial. And what is it? It's a commercial from the natural gas lobby lauding the wonderful hydrofracking. And we're so safe and we make sure that we don't do anything wrong. And, yeah, after all, we can really trust that because, after all, you know, companies like ExxonMobil and BP are so careful about the way they handle their product, right?
Yeah.
So we should be able to trust the natural gas lobby after all. You know, I mean, it's so ridiculous. I mean, talk about hypocrisy. They're saying one thing on their shows, and then you go and cut away to commercials from Wall Street and from the greatest bigots and polluters in the entire country. I mean, this is credible journalism? I mean, come on. You know, it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. And I see it is bottom of the hour, and I need to get myself another cup of delicious hot something because my voice is starting to get a little strained. So while I do that, Mr. Mike, why don't you throw on another song? We'll be right back.
Joshua Clip.
Hi, let me ask you a musical question. What do you consider your kind of music? Country and Western? Circus music? What about...
Homer, a happy little homosexual. Sexual.
Q1.
Now, that's my kind of music.
It's happy little piano meter.
Little Mikey Scott has a brand new toy. It has the spirit of Steve Jobs inside it. I love it. It's so wonderful. I can play songs just by pushing things on my iPad. It's the best thing ever.
Oh, my goodness. Well, hello again, everybody. This is the Rebecca Giroux Show. He is Mike Scott. I am Rebecca Giroux. Thanks for staying with us. And, you know... Few things did happen this week. One thing I thought was very interesting. Of course, as you may know, Chaz Bono, still on Dancing with the Stars. He's managed to keep up. And, you know, it's interesting. He was honored by the Gay and Lesbian Center for promoting transgender visibility, which is kind of cool. You know, and I'll read this as a little short little article here. Activist and Dancing with the Stars contestant Chaz Bono has been commended for working since 1995 to make our movement stronger and will be honored with the prestigious Board of Directors Award by the Gay and Lesbian Center. Now, I have to wonder, I don't think Chaz has been transgender identified since 1995. So I'm kind of... puzzled by that one.
Yeah.
Basically, Lori Jean, which is the center's CEO, a very nice person. I interviewed her a long, long time ago. She said Chaz has been a trailblazer in our community for many years, bravely speaking his truth and working to make our movement stronger. He has continued that leadership since coming out as a transgender man. No other person has done more than Chaz to promote visibility and understanding about the reality of transgender people. His courageous example is helping transgender youth and their families throughout the world. That's great progress, not only for the LGBT community, but for society as a whole. And that's terrific. I mean, you know, it's great that Chaz has got on Dancing with the Stars. He's gotten on all these shows, and you know, Jimmy Fallon and I don't know, Jay Leno, I think he was on. He's been on Bill Maher. He was on that panel with Don Lemon. You know, and I think that's great. I think it's great that he's promoting visibility. Of course, you know, speaking as somebody who has invited him on this show and was basically told, oh, he doesn't have time for you, that was kind of a little disappointing. Because, you know, he's got time for the straight folks. He's got time for the rich gay folks. Apparently he doesn't have time for his own community media. But that's disappointing. But, you know, I agree that he, you know. I should also point out, make this point, that Chaz, I've actually communicated with him by email over Facebook. He seems like a really nice guy. He referred me when I originally invited him on. He referred me to his agent. I think his name is Howard Bragman. And I called his office and I was basically told, you know, and it seemed to me, and I don't know this for a fact. I mean, I can't read people's minds, but it seemed to me that the real issue was not that he didn't have time, because he certainly had time for other people. He had time for Signorelli. He had time for all this other stuff. But, you know, it seemed like really the main concern was he wasn't going to sell as many books on this show, which, you know what? Yeah, it's the truth, okay? We're a small community. I've got an audience to match, I guess. You know, and, you know, but it's the community. It's our community. And I wanted to give him a different interview. I mean, I'm not going to ask him what it feels like to shave like Don Lemon does, you know? And, you know, I kind of feel miffed not because, you know, I'm any big shot or anything, but because, you know, if you'll go on a show like that and answer questions like that, and you could tell by watching that panel that he was not happy, and rightly so, you know, but if you're willing to put up with that crap, you know, you could at least give us a few minutes. That's just my opinion, you know. And all right, granted, you know, I have a certain bias here. I mean, I'm talking about my own show, but I mean, you know, come on, dude. It's like, you know, talk to your own community. And if you won't, what does that say about you? I don't know. I don't want to make it sound like I'm bashing Chaz Bono, because I'm not. And I don't want it to be seen that way. If anything, my issue is with his management, who just apparently, you know, didn't see a profit in having him appear on our show. And, you know, I'll happily blame his agent for that. I don't believe that Chaz himself, if he was making those decisions, would be that way. I really don't. I exchanged email, and granted, you know, he sent back a short email when I invited him, but, you know, I tend to blame who was most likely the culprit there. You know, and hey, whatever. But anyway, so, you know, kudos to Chaz for getting this award. Apparently, also honored at this thing will be Neil Patrick Harris and David Burtka. I don't know who David Burtka is. I think he's Neil Patrick Harris's partner. It was hosted by Leslie Jordan. You know, must be nice to, you know, be all Hollywood and shit. But anyway, you know, I mean, but, you know, it's a good thing. Anything that gains us, him, and therefore us, more exposure. And I think the fact that he's lasted as long as he has on Dancing with the Stars, given that let's be honest, I don't know if you've seen his performances, but, you know, he had a painful ankle, and, you know, Patrick Swayze, he ain't, you know what I mean? You know, I think that the fact that he's on there is mainly because people are going out of their way to support this guy. I think that says something, and it's a good thing, because what he's doing is he's calling people to pick a side. You're either going to be anti-trans or you're going to be pro-trans. Because at this point, you know, a lot of times gay is old. Gay is passe at this point. It's like, you know, so somebody is gay. Who gives a shit? I mean, Carson Kressley on the show too. I mean, nobody gives a shit that he's gay. And he's so gay he's flaming, probably sets the room on fire. You know, he's one of these people. And, you know, but like gay OGs are gay. Who gives a fuck? The only people who care are people who are against it. Most people don't care. That's the reality. They just don't. You know, people ask themselves, you know, I care about taxes. I care about jobs. I care about, you know, having a good life. I want my kids to have a better life than I did. You know, nobody's saying, you know, we've got to stop gay marriage and crap like that. You know, it's just not, I mean, even the Republicans have realized. I mean, you don't hear them talking about this stuff anymore, except to their own base, because it's red meat for the Republican, you know, Republican primary base. But, you know, the truth is the independents, the moderates, the Democrats, nobody gives a shit. And when you think about it, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 15 years ago, when Democrats were still campaigning on anti-gay bigotry, like they were when Bill Clinton campaigned for his second term on passing Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the Defense of Marriage Act. He campaigned in the South saying, oh, aren't I great? Look at what an anti-gay bigot I am. I mean, not in those words, but that was basically the thrust of the argument. So much so that there were gay people in his administration who threatened to leave. You know, and we've come so far in that direction that people just don't care. I mean, there are gay people in the Obama administration. Nobody gives a shit. You know when they freaked out with Amanda Simpson? Then all of a sudden, oh, they're promoting an agenda. It's like, no, they're hiring somebody to do a job. Somebody who's extremely well qualified, who's got the experience, and who deserves it. And yeah, she happens to be transgender. So what? But we haven't reached that point. We haven't reached the so what point with transgender yet. We've reached it in a lot of cases with gay folks. And the thing is we will, because what you see is the youth. Okay, and this goes back to what we were talking about with Justin Adkins a while back. You know, you see these kids, and a lot of it is kids. You know, I'm almost 50. I can say this. You know, it's kids who are out there at these Occupy protests, and they don't see why they should be discriminating against gay people. They don't see why they should be discriminating against transgender people. They don't see why transgender people shouldn't have the same rights that they do. And so those are the people who will eventually become the ruling class of this country. Just as now we're finally at the point where the hippies, the kids who were protesting in the early 70s and the late 60s, those are the ruling class now. Those are the people who are in their late 50s, well, not even 60s, early to mid 60s. Those are the folks who are at the top of the food chain now. And we're starting to see that agenda slowly make its way into the culture, because you're seeing, again, 15 years ago, 1995, 96, you know, it was still okay for Democrats to campaign on anti-LGBT bigotry. I ain't working anymore. It's just not. You know, sure, there are still plenty of people who are against gay marriage. But the truth is, workplace rights? No, not really. Not really. And along those lines, let's move on a little bit. Walmart. Just added transgender protections to their employee non-discrimination policy. And what was interesting was that they've done this. And they passed this, and the company spokesperson told Windy City Times that changes went into effect several weeks ago and supposedly will safeguard workers from discrimination and harassment based on gender identity and gender expression. He said, we've had a strong anti-discrimination policy for a long time. The company, however, has a history of butting heads with LGBT workers and equality organizations. In 2010, an employee claimed he was stripped of many of his responsibilities and forced to wear a yellow vest while in the store after he admitted he was gay to a supervisor. In January of this year, Stonewall Democrats of New York City, joined other anti-Walmart groups intent on keeping the big box retailer out of New York City. Specifically citing homophobia as the motivation, and the group released a statement at the time, and they said, Walmart represents a culture of intolerance and insensitivity towards LGBT employees and issues that is unwelcome in New York. Just last year, more than 100 Walmart stores were found to be promoting a children's book that suggested that gay people can overcome sin and convert to heterosexuality with the help of counseling. Walmart CEO Mike Duke signed a petition in his home state of Arkansas that was aimed at preventing adoption by gay and lesbian parents. And they also said that Walmart received a 40 on the 2011 Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index, which, of course, is the index that grades companies on LGBT issues, as we all know. ExxonMobil was named the worst company in the country to work for with a zero rating. WalmartWatch.org reported the company received a 15-point deduction on the points for a large-scale official or public anti-LGBT blemish on their recent records, specifically by opposing a shareholder resolution to amend their non-discrimination policies to include gender identity. Now, the other problem, which is I've done some further reading, and what I've discovered is that, yeah, they passed this thing, but they have not issued a time. It is not in effect, and they have offered no timeline for when it will be in effect. So they, you know, they technically passed it. They passed this thing on its board, but it's not implemented, and they have not yet said when it will ever be implemented. So basically at this point, and you know, hopefully they'll prove me wrong, but at this point all it is just a show vote. I mean, to say, yeah, we're really not bigots. Okay, because, you know, the fact is you can be sure that they took a look and they successfully kept them out of New York City. Okay? They want New York City. They want to be able to build Walmarts in New York City and other places where their anti-LGBT record is going to be an issue. And let's not forget also, it's not just anti-LGBT, it's anti-woman. It's anti-racial and ethnic minority. I mean, you know, if you're not a white straight guy, chances are you're not going very far in that company. And they know, and people are hip to it now. And they're saying, you know what? We don't want that crap in our area. We don't want those kind of companies setting up shop in our hometowns. People care about this. And they're starting to realize, you know what? Your bigotry is going to cost you money. So they held a show vote, or at least that's what it is at this point, until they actually implement this thing. It's a show vote. That's all it is. It's a show vote. You know, let's see them do something about it. I would love to see that. Let's see how many transgender people they actually hire. Let's see how far they get in the company once they are hired. You know, that I would like to see. I would like to see that very much. But, you know, honestly, I really don't think that we're going to. I just don't. Moving on. There was also an effort, just goes to show you, even in California, you know, the bigots are still strong. Sacramento, this comes to us from the AP. Opponents of a California law requiring that the contributions of gays and lesbians be taught in public schools, which passed a while back. Opponents of a California law requiring that the contributions of gay and lesbians be taught in public schools failed Wednesday in their attempt to qualify a ballot referendum to repeal the law. The groups wanted to force a vote on Senate Bill 48, the nation's very first law requiring that public schools include gay rights milestones and gay and lesbian contributions in social studies lessons. It takes effect in January. Groups that have been circulating signature petitions said that they would not meet Wednesday's deadline. Sure, because nobody gives a shit. People think, you know, it's history. You know, you can feel the way you want about gays and lesbians, pro, con, whatever. But history is history. I mean, I don't know anybody who's in favor of slavery. I guess there are some people out there who are, but I don't know anybody personally. But you know what? Slavery is history. It's part of our history. It deserves to be taught, even if it's unpleasant, even if you don't like it personally, even if you don't approve of it. Okay? I mean, there are a lot of things in American history and in world history that are not pleasant. Whether you feel that gays and lesbians are, you know, how you feel, positive, negative, don't give a shit, regardless, it's not relevant. It's history. History is history. And if you really want to have a discussion, why not bring up those issues and have a discussion about them? Okay. Now, of course, one of these guys for the Pacific Justice Institute, which is basically, you know, California's like biggest organization, one of them, said his organization and other opponents collected about two-thirds of the 505,000 petition signatures they needed. There's also involved was the Traditional Values Coalition, and they said they had not decided not to file regardless of whether they reached the threshold. And because these people are starting to realize this is not going to win them support. This is petty crap. This is just saying we hate gay people and we're going to do everything we can to show how much we hate gay people. Well, people don't give a shit anymore. People are not going to come out against gay people just for the sake of coming out for gay people. Now, if you want to argue, well, gay marriage hurts people, blah, 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 blah. If you want to give a reason, okay, whether or not it's a credible reason or not, if you want to say, hey, here's why But there's no reason. What they're saying is we want to keep children in the dark. We want to not teach them all of the history. Well, you know, it's going to be a lot tougher to get people on your side. It's kind of like the hate crimes bill, you know, where why did it pass? Because let's see a Republican come out and say, oh, I am in favor of, you know, gay and trans people getting beaten up in the street. That's not something you support. And so a lot of people, even if they didn't think that, there should be a right for us to work, you know, there are not too many people, regardless, who are going to come out and say, I don't think, you know, these people should be, you know, I'm in favor of these people being beaten and not having the law be effective against the people who are beating them up or killing them. You know, I mean, that's kind of a hard position to get behind. Same thing here. You know, what they're saying is these you know, right-wing organizations are saying, we want to keep children in the dark. We don't want them to know that gay people exist. It's like, well, you know what? Get a clue. I mean, I don't care. If there are gay people in Idaho, then, you know, there's gay people in California. You know, and people are just, you know, maybe they're just a little bit more sophisticated about these things on the coasts. You know, I mean, I say that as living in a coast state. You know, and maybe, you know, the Northeast, the West Coast, places like that, maybe they're a little bit more at ease with these things. Now, going on, they're now saying that they're going to try to make it the law an issue in next year's reelection campaigns by Democrats who supported the measure. That's probably not going to fly. Again, people don't give a shit. They say that they're considering seeking enough signatures for a broader ballot proposition that would target laws they feel infringe on parental rights to govern what their children learn about in school. However, opponents would have to work around California's single subject rule, meaning that initiatives can only address one issue at a time. One of the quotes from the spokesman for one of these bigot organizations said, legislators in Sacramento have been put on notice that if they pass something that is disrespectful to parents and the way parents want their children to be raised, they can and will, in one way or another, be held accountable. He said that the groundswell of dissatisfaction was evident because his organization and the Capital Resource Institute were able to gather thousands of signatures in just 90 days without time to raise the money needed to hire professional signature gatherers. Well, yeah, but that's the problem. You know, these people are the reality is this is just not a big concern for people because they want their children to understand diversity. They want their children to know these things and to make up their own minds. You know, talk about mind control, talk about social engineering, which is what, you know, the old saw they always pull out. I mean, that's exactly what this is. This is social engineering. They're saying, we want our children to grow up anti-gay. Well, you know what? How about your children grow up the way they want to grow up? You know, with having all the facts and making their own decisions. How about that one, you know? Hey, there's a novel idea. They said, now, someone from Equality California predicted that opponents' fights will become more difficult once the law takes effect. They've used a lot of scare tactics and made a lot of statements that aren't true. All of these wild sorts of wild claims will not materialize in the classroom, and California voters will realize that this is really much ado about nothing. Exactly. And wow, that was a great show. I am just like, I have to come down from this one. Well, I just want to say thank you to everybody. We're about ready to wrap this sucker up. I want to say thank you to Justin Adkins for joining us earlier. I want to say thank you to you for tuning in, for supporting this media. We will catch you next week. I believe we're going to try and schedule Bill Browning, possibly also Jeremy Davis. We're not sure how we're going to work this. Maybe Jeremy might be on the following week. And we will catch you next week. Stay safe out there. Good night.